I've never seen a musky burden. They break my wallet, my back is hurting. All I want is a safe catch and release. Am I dumb enough? Am I tough enough? Am I rich enough? I'm 19.
Folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast.
Pretty girls. Oh, pretty skis. Such a pretty.
Oh, man.
How are you doing, Steve?
Just got done collaring my huevos for Easter.
Oh, that's great.
Awesome. Did he have an Easter egg hunt? Your neighbor Steve go out in the yard?
No, it was snowing, I think, yesterday, and it was kind of nasty. It was snowing a little bit today again. Too snow for the Easter egg activities outdoors.
You can make it hard on them kids, boys. Put them out there, Timmy. Find you that white egg in the snow. Well, other than that, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's Steve, we got the ice is melting away. It's almost complete open water around here. So with every bad, snowy, cold day in the 30s with some wind, you know, it's helping open up the lakes. Yeah. Still opening the lakes up. So might be ice free by tomorrow around here. So right on time.
Right.
We haven't had ice out on time for a few years. The best part about on time is that you usually have normally great fishing for the rest of the year.
It doesn't mess stuff up. Right. So the spawn's not all screwy and
Weed growth and all that jazz. Yeah, for sure.
There you go. I actually heard from a friend. He was perching the other day and latched
perching.
Or something. Can't you get fish perch or whatever? I don't know what he was fishing for, but he's fishing for like panfish or whatever, right? Where it's like some open water and just fooling around off the bank and latched into like two Dinkerstein skis already. He's like, whoa, okay, better move on. When can people up there? Because I love it for patterning. What's the soonest? Are there people out? Well, not with the snow, but how soon could somebody be on a boat, Jay, in your neck of the woods, checking things out?
Wednesday's looking like a good day. It's supposed to be 60s, and after tomorrow, I think any ice on some of these mid-sized lakes will be completely gone. Looks like the little lakes are open now, so
that's awesome.
Looking good. You can get a boat out. At least, get the kinks out, make sure everything's running good and all that. So,
can you fish back? What's the deal with that? You've told me this a million times, but like you can't fish. You can fish like panfish only, like no walleye, no bass, no I know there's no muskie, and there's a
Wisconsin, right? It's a game season thing. So walleye, pike, all that stuff opens first Saturday in May, but muskie for us opens in Saturday.
But what about
May,
bass and all that crap?
There is some catch and release. You can go out and catch release only if you're targeting bass.
Wow.
So that's a rare deal. So that's something to do.
Yeah, man, get out there and go for a boat ride. That's the next fun thing, Jay. The next fun little deal everybody's going to deal with is pulling their boat out of storage up north, which is always hell. So as someone who's just, I'm going through the ringer right now, getting everything rigged and
Danny Herbeck called a couple days ago and I was talking with him for a while and man, have you talked to him lately about all the snow and ice that you still have up in Nicholas?
He just got smattered. I talked to him,
He's a little worried about stuff melting and flooding. So, he went out ice fishing I think it was Tuesday last week. I'm like, oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Danny, come on.
It'll wear thin. Last time I talked to him, which I think that was yesterday, coming home from the water, and it just, we were just BS, and it was like you could just tell winter was wearing thin.
I had the same type of effect when he called me.
Well, my God, it's April 21st. Yeah, I mean, you think? Mm-hmm. Get it over with. But things up, it seems like the further north you are, things happen faster. You know, it's like boom. It's less of a slow grind, and things just kind of jump for it. So, other than that, Jay, we finally done did it. Got those planer boards out to folks, and that finally, stop hearing about that one.
Yep.
Oh, that is cool, and your little Magnus tails and all that. What else happened here? Same kind of time frame. Looks like some swimming dog. What are these? Some of their custom show collar stuff.
No, there are customs.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It took a long time in the making. About 10 patterns. Very nice patterns in the shallow and regular swimming dogs by Musky Innovations.
Very nice. You got the very nice. Heck yeah, boys. That'll do, pig. That'll do. So, gosh, man. What else is new, Jay? It's like between. We're just get her
we've
rolling.
Got a nice
here.
Full-length video coming out tomorrow on how to set up and how to run trolling boats.
What was that? Trolling boats.
Yeah, trolling boards for yeah.
Heck
good
yeah.
Stuff. No. High detail. Made now, by your host, Stephen Paul.
Shot out there. In
heavy detail. Tricks of the trade on using
enough.
The blade. Yeah. Put more fish in the boat. Learn how to troll. They're simple.
They're simple.
Go ahead.
Simple. Now,
they are.
I'll tell you something on the boards. It's like today, there was crap floating everywhere. And I'll tell you, those, and that's kind of why it's called the blade.
There you go.
When I'm coming up with a name, like, what do you call it? You know, but it cuts through crap, and it's very helpful if you're dealing with a lot of weeds and a lot of floating stuff. And I didn't necessarily need planer boards, but I was using them to clear a path, which is kind of handy dandy, you know, even if you're not that far off the boat. So little trick there. And I think finally in the video, people asked all the time about that. Don't be afraid. You control your walleye baits with this. I promise.
Yeah.
Right. Cause some guys like, dude, you know, I've got this for walleye. I was like, when I'm throwing little stuff, and I think I mentioned in the video, like a Smithwick Rogue or, you know, you control bandits, and I've done it. Hey, you want to put one in the pan, you know? That's what I always say if I'm going to try to catch a walleye, Jay. Oh, I'm just doing it for food. No one would do this for pleasure. So, but, you know, try it. You might like it. No, it works really well, and I think finally pointed out, you know, because now that people have them, people are going, what does this do? What does that do? But the reason they have the curved rings in the front is where it self-levels, but you can see that bait action, and that's going to be the big thing on your smaller baits. You go, oh, it's still doing the thing. So you can actually watch your rod tip. Your rod tip still has action.
Translates to the rod tip.
Translates right. Straight to the tip. Straight to the tip, Jay.
That's key.
That's the key. Other than that, what else we got here? Spoon kit. Spoon man.
That is Tom's pride and joy. Shout out to Tom Rudis. Oh, was he happy that morning?
Oh,
we got
that.
He really was.
Incredible. Call grandpa. They done did it. Boys, if your grandpa's looking to gear up for 19 and 34, oh, the spoon kit.
Yep. He's a spoon aficionado. And if you ever stop in the shop and you want to see some pictures, you ask Tom Rudis, Tom, can I see some pictures of your personal spoon collection? Because it is something else.
Man,
it really is.
People are sad.
Mm-hmm.
There's other things.
Everybody's getting ready to go to Canada. You know, they're planning ahead for their Canadian trip. You know, early trip for Big Pike.
Big Pike. Now, you were saying that. I played with the other day who makes the dang thing? That Beast Spoon. The big son of a gun.
Smith Lures, yeah.
Smith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, compare it. Okay, I'm not knocking your old Daredevil and all that stuff. Don't get me wrong. But I'm not stoked about spoons. It's hard for me to get real excited about it. However, that spoon is cool. That big, okay, here it is. Smith Lures, the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
Shockingly large spoon. Heck of a prop washer. That thing is bad to the bone in prop wash. So casting, it's got, you know how your spoon has that lope, right? Up, over, over, under, blop, blop, flop, back and forth kind of deal. Where it's such a big spoon, like no matter how fast you're reeling in, it kind of gets in a really, really tight rhythm. Does it make sense, Jay? Like there's not a lot of variation because you're having to huck it, you know, how long is this thing? 50, so 9 inches. It just catches so much water, you're not able to really, it's not very erratic when cast. Like when you're casting it and retrieving it, I was playing with it, but you put that kind of tighter in a prop wash, it is nasty cool. It's just going everywhere. So we'll see what it does. You know, if nothing else, it looks cool. We'll put more on that later. I will report back when I know. Other than looking
very
cool,
very flashy and very erratic.
There you go. That's
you know,
that's
what, you what know, the it, heck. Big it, profile. It's like large spoon.
It's like a badger wearing flashy and erratic. It's like a badger wearing a disco ball track suit, Jay. What are you going to do? Flashy and erratic. Other than that, you know, it's this in between. We're off on our days. We're late. You know, we felt, Jay just said, we felt like it did. We just did it. And now we got to, you know, we're just riffing this week just a bit here. But might as well delve into the thoughts on early season, right? Now, there's more incoming, but when it's we're kind of circling the drain here on winter for most of you guys, like you're just saying, of what do we really need? I mean, such a common question of what do we really need to have in our arsenal? What do we need to be geared up with? You know, you hear all the stuff all winter long, buy this, buy that, and you gotta have this, you gotta have that, right? You know, the reality of the matter is you need just a small smattering of baits, which, you know, your classic, you know, your twitch baits, your shallow raiders, your cranes, your slammers, you know, the small arsenal, your small blades, small topwaters, Jay, maybe a small rubber bait and spinner baits. That's about get you, wouldn't you say?
Well, you kept using the word small too, and it's just like, yeah, if you're going to invest in, yeah, if you're going to invest in a dozen baits, make sure they're on the small side.
Right.
Nothing more. Just for musky fishing, you know, and then you can use one setup. You know, if it's not something you're going to do a lot, hey, that's the way to do it, you know. Don't get, you know what I mean? Don't get a pounder. Don't get a 14-ounce bait and then, you know, back that up and also have a MEPS number 5, you know, on deck ready to throw, because you're going to need at least two different setups for that. So you want to keep it simple. Yep. And then, muskies eat smaller baits. Hey.
And it's the post spawn, the early thing. So at least look at it, you know, from a conceptual standpoint of what's happening, right? So again, let's you have pre-spawn, but you guys don't have pre-spawn when you have a close season. So what is going to happen, right? What has taken place? Well, the ice has come off, and a lot of people think, you know, that under the ice, these things are completely, absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt, lethargic, right? That there's just absolutely nothing taking place. They have actually been moving and grooving and doing some different things, right? So it's been proven time and time again that they're eating under the ice, right? They're working towards more shallow zones than you think. They're not out there in the middle just going, I'm doing nothing. So the ice comes off and they're already patrolling. These other fish come up. These fish are already pushing shallow, right? Now, Jay, you're seeing some of these smaller lakes, they're pushed shallow, right? So once the season finally opens, hopefully in most of, definitely in the northern zone, you know, and Jay, does it usually hit in the southern part of Wisconsin that the spawns done by the time that opens? Are you aware of it ever being taking place, or have they given a wide enough berth?
That remains to be ironclad. I would say usually they're done spawning. Okay. The southern zone in Wisconsin opens
2 weeks ahead.
Less than 2 weeks. Yeah, yeah. First Saturday in May. So
very shortly.
You know, and I have friends down in that part of the state. It's like they haven't had ice for a while.
Yeah.
It is a different, you know, you drive 3 hours south of where the Muskie Shop is, and it's a whole different planet. Yeah. You know,
different climate.
Yeah. You know, it's not just, oh, okay, you guys were 4 degrees, you know, colder than us down here today. It's like, oh, no, you start talking about 10 degrees every day, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah,
and getting rain instead of the snow, and then, you know, freezing at night and then not freezing at night down there. Yeah, open water for some time. Guys have had their boats out and stuff like that. And, you know, there's a lot of river opportunity down there, too. So a lot of people are doing that. Pass the time, get the kinks out of the boat. They go walleye fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And the river systems and all that. So yeah, they're gonna be muskie fishing in less than 2 weeks, which right. is remarkably cool.
But you know what's important to realize, you know, that these fish are staged shallow pretty much already, spawn or no spawn, right? And that they're going to remain there. And so it's one of those deals of what I like about the early season, when you, especially in an area like the North or anywhere that Illinois up, all that fun stuff, you can pretty much forget about any other game plan. That's what's kind of exciting about it. But you really need to maximize it. So, you know, just kind of touching on some of this stuff and a refresher for everybody that's coming into that spawn or you're about to be able to get after them here. There's north sides of the lake. We've talked about this before, but people go, well, why would you target the north end of the lake? Well, Jay, it receives what?
More sunlight.
More sun, right? But something that's kind of the sleeper in that aspect that never gets talked about, but it sends most people on a, kind of that wild goose chase looking for just the looking at the north end of the lake. One needs to also consider, you know, anything that is southerly facing as well. So points, you know, small cuts, bays, anything that's going to have more sun exposure. So you might have an extended point and things of that nature or smaller flats. It's not just relocated to geographically the north end of the lake, right? It can be the north side of a small bay or an inlet and things of that nature. So a great way to look at is going what shoreline or what areas are southern facing, therefore getting hit with more sun, right? Now, immediately, where are we going to look for? What are we going to look for kind of off the rip here? Should be, you know, the shallow zones near the spawning flats. And that's typically, you know, inches. And that's what a lot of people don't realize of how shallow they will spawn. And then secondly, how shallow they will be at times. Right. So, you know, you'll see guys and they've got the big, you know, you got your big deep V Ranger, you know, you got your expensive glass boat and they're way outside of where they should be. This is the time that you need to get up into the crap, right? As shallow gets, because 10 feet in your cast length makes a huge difference. And having the ability to actually get into these zones, because Jay, a lot of this stuff in the early part for me, we're past that now, right? But I'm trimming the motor up so I'm not scraping, raising the trolling motor up so I'm able to get into stuff that you can barely figure eight in, right? You got mm-hmm. 2 feet clearance under the boat. You've got very little water where the temperature difference on some of this stuff is incredible. And I just, what I'm getting at is don't be afraid to cast up shallow, right? Then secondly, you know, you hope that they're that shallow, but be working in a fashion where you're looking for the difference, not looking for the difference, but you're looking for a target zone that could be anywhere from 1 feet of water to a whopping six, but it makes a huge difference, right? So you might be too tight one day and you come out the next day and you're too far out. Be patterning just in that small zone, because you will see a distinct like line almost of where they'll hang or where they won't. right? Because one day they're super shallow, and the next day they're slightly out, right? With just small changes. And then following that with having the flexibility and the foresight to go, okay, things have kind of fallen off a cliff. We have the inevitable spring cold front, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then they drop back to that first break. Then they kick out a little bit more. They might be sitting at the bottom at a mere 6 feet. Now you're nowhere near them, right? But what I like about the early season is it's very, very truncated as to where they will be, but we need to pick it apart because casting proximity becomes huge because we're using small baits, small lures, right? So something to put in your head. I'm actually, if you can't tell, Jay, I'm just, believe it or not, hopefully I'll have it done before the bash. I have no time. Jay can attest. It's like, Jay, all winter I call Jay 4 times a day. Now it's like, I'm like, hey, man, let's do the podcast. I'm just living, eating, breathing it. But trying to do some edits, some final edits on the second book here. And it's something I discuss, which is when we're throwing small lures, right, it's imperative that we saturation cast areas because the vibrational profile of the bait obviously is smaller. It's a smaller visual target. However, shallow water absorbs that vibration. So it's not going out. If you're fishing in 2 feet of water, it's going left and right from the bait, but there's no calling the fish from down or up. There's far less of a hit box, if you will.
Yeah, right. It's true.
You've really got to put it close to them, which I watch it day in and day out. Here's a cast. And they reel it in, and they make their next cast, and it lands 30 feet from where that cast was, and they make another one, and they fish that area, you know, opposed to getting into an area and fan casting, strategically covering as much of that as you can. And today was gangbusters, but yesterday for me was a matter of, okay, here's 7 million casts on the same area, and boom, here it comes. There's the fish. Been there the whole time, right? In this shell, there you go. Okay, something kind of cracked loose in that fish head. I'll play ball. I'll come out and check that out, right? Where don't be afraid to make multiple casts and change your casting angle across things that are important. So let's say you're fishing something that I think of a classic, super classic, post-spawn season opener kind of thing, that like your Bookertail 500 or your Giant Killer, right, Jay?
Smaller boat tips. Million
people. Like, of anything that's going to get thrown opening day, that's probably very high on the list, right?
Yeah, sure.
So with that, I mean, you have super good casting accuracy with those things. But you should be looking at, are my casts landing no more than, say, 4 feet apart on areas that you're covering? And I think that's the difference for the early season of people catching fish or not. Can you hold yourself to the standard of actually covering an area? And I put it that way because I don't go, can you cast a bite? Anybody can do that, but can you force yourself to have the discipline and control to plot through an area and actually cover it, right? Opposed to the next fish the next muskie is 100% in front of the boat, right? 100,000%. Now, the reason I say this is I'm always griping about casting saturation. I'm always going, well, you know, if you've patterned them into an area, why are we worried about running to the next area, right? But it becomes so much tighter when these fish are lethargic post-spawn and they're recouping and recovering. They're not interested in running their tails off to get in front of a fish, right? There's tons of things pushed up shallow. You've just come off the heels of spawns before theirs. You got pike spawn, you got wet walleye spawn, you've got so many different things happening, right? Mm-hmm. Where there's plentiful bait, the muskies that are post-spawn, they're going to be willing to wait for the easy meal, right? And the easy meal is not necessarily slow speed. The easy meal is tight proximity. I'm laying here on this flat. It's got to get real close to me where before I feel that I know I can grab it no matter what. Right? From the muscular perspective. Right?
Yep.
So
yep.
Thinking from the standpoint of the rest of the year, right? The dynamic is muskies use, they will use open, you know, they'll use open water to ambush from below. You know, they'll use weeds, they'll use timber, they'll use rocks as these ambush points or anchoring points in the anticipation of fish, and they'll come haired out and follow and go crazy. Well, when everything is pushed shallow and they're lingering shallow, the only thing that they can do is wait for something to get close enough, because at that point, they're not just going to cruise those shallows all day long in search of a small meal, right? It's got to come to them. Now, do they know where to be to make sure that happens? Absolutely, right? So they're not going to be lingering in dead zones or you know, shallow zones that are not showing signs of life. And obviously you see all these other bait fish and other species that gravitate to those warmer zones in the early season. But the concept to pound in your head is, hey, I need to get it close to the fish. I need to make it easy for them. And I might need to put it over it multiple times before I get the engagement. Right? So truncating your casts and looking at spacing. Even, Jay, if you have two guys in the boat, if your casts are landing, if, let's say you're working very, very in a very linear manner where you're both throwing at, say, like a shallow shoreline, right? There's absolutely nothing wrong with your cast landing 4 or 5 feet apart at all.
Sure.
Me and you, when we're on the boat, that's typically what we do even in summer peak, right? I'm not going to sit here and go through an area and go, wow, we didn't catch one, and your casts are 20, 30 feet apart. It's silly, right? But proximity is going to be the most important factor. So tightening your casting, right, using two different presentations is never a bad idea. But tightening your casts up so that you're ensuring if there's a muskie there, guess what happened, Jay? What happened if your casts are landing, say, 4 to 5 feet apart from your boat partner, or you're slower than that and you're fishing solo and you're really covering like that? If there's a muskie there, guess what? He at least saw or felt your presentation. Now, if they're active or not, that's a thing, but I'm just putting this in everybody's head because statistics are important when proximity is there. So if muskies are inactive, we better get in front of a bunch of them, right? So,
increase your odds. Yeah, it's like rolling into a bay, you know, right. Post spawn, rolling into shallow water. I think they're way more spooky in shallow water. And
yes, good point.
You know what I mean? Yeah, you don't saturate casts, and how many times you come up, it's like, oh wow, there's one. Yeah. Well, he already saw you, and he's gone. You know, he's out of there.
Well, that's a good
missed opportunity. So, yeah,
that's a great point, which is it's just dependent. I've seen it where there's times, and I don't know, just riffing here, but I don't want to say it's like later in the summer that they care less, but in the early season, right, they do tend to be at least for me, a bit spookier. If you come raging in, or, you know, I've seen it countless times. If you're in shallow water and you just see one that's scorching out, opposed in the summer, it seems like you could hit them with the prop of your trolling motor. Right? Meh, I don't care. But I would say definitely up north and in areas that have fishing pressure in general, I think stealth is of importance right at that early part of the season when you're fishing that really shallow stuff. You know, just creeping in, like you said, don't pull into the bay. And that's something I'm doing on the daily right now, is I'm not trying to pull into an area and just like blast it with wake right off the rip. Right. And as things warm up, I tend to care less about that, but you know, hey, I'm going to ease her down a little bit before I get in there and kind of slide in on the trolling motor
Well, go ahead. I was just thinking, you know, how important boat control is in that matter. I think last week you were talking about boat control in great depth. Early spring, post-spawn, you got a kind of a north bay. It's like, okay, this is perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a nice shallow bay. South wind's crashing in there. It's warming up. It's sunny. It's warming up even more. It's hitting that shallow ground and reflecting up and, you know, doing that thermal heating thing. And it's just like you got some wind. It would be easy just to roll in there and drift in there, and you're going to be drifting over so many fish if you don't effectively use boat control to your advantage and saturate cast that way, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a modicum of forethought. And I think right now, you know, everybody's itching, and that's why I'm getting a little preachy. Everybody's itching to get out, right? If you haven't been able to fish yet, everybody's just freaking, right? And yeah, you might the first day you go get your yah-yahs out, and what most guys do, Jay, they tend to get every bait they've bought wet, right? So everything that's you've stacked up over the winter and the off season for these guys that are mm-hmm. fishing season, they're loaded up and they want to play with their toys. Right? You want to play with your toys and you want to see what they
do. Yeah, I get it. Right. Yeah, you want to see what they do and try out some new baits.
Right.
Yeah.
Get that out of your system and then start mm-hmm. getting tactical is what I'm getting at. You know, mm-hmm. and there's huge, like I said, there's just so much opportunity, especially up in the north section of like, okay, there's some of the biggest fish of the year. They're up there.
Yes.
That's what I'm getting at. That's like making a point. Like if you think about it, let's say this, you are on whatever lake, right? I don't care. You know, Minnesota's not that far behind all these other bodies, whatever. But you are on so-and-so lake, whatever. Well, we know, I said it earlier, the fish are truncated in small zones. Check. Right? They haven't seen a bait in months. Check. Okay? But you've got a couple weeks before the pounding starts. That's what's exciting about it, because if you're smart and you just go, heck, this is the scenario, this is what I need to do to be successful. When you think your game plan through, you're leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else. Because Jay and I have seen it where you talk to you'll know who I'm talking about. And we're not making fun, but we, you know, Jay and I talked to this guy and he's talking about fishing opener. Like, what are you throwing? He said, double 12s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
and that's an extreme case, but he was literally like me and Jerry, like, okay. He's yeah. like, there's big fish. I'm fishing the fox, throwing double 12s.
Yeah. Shock him into biting.
Shock. Sure. And you go,
give it a shot.
And I didn't follow up on that one, but I can guess. Right?
Donut hole.
Donut hole would be. I mean, and again, obviously, you remember remember some of the stuff that's absolutely off the wall there. So now, mm-hmm. and I say that. I mean, there's been monster fish caught opening week, like on big baits. Don't get me wrong. Right. So I know one of Duff's buddies caught just a giant in Minnesota trolling 12 inch headlocks, like opening morning. Right. So there's a lot of different scenarios. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you can't throw big stuff. I'm just going for this opening stuff, the typical scenario. I say be sliding in that shallow stuff and slicing and dicing it to the umpth degree. Even if you watched another boat go through it, watch how fast they go through it and watch what they missed and focus yeah. there.
Good point.
Again, you and I have done it, Jay. Wait for them. Okay, what are they doing? Okay, all right.
Ripping, yeah, plastic, right. Very fast drift. Yep,
right,
yep,
right. Sure. They got the freaking Minn Kota on 73. You know, you might as well put a squirrel on a surfboard behind the boat because they're making a wake with their trolling motor on season opener, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the most glaring hole in most people's musky game plan, period. It's just boat control. And there's going to be a lot of opportunity for guys that are willing to really cover that stuff. Now, something that's interesting too during that time frame and that post-spawn time frame is how many fish will eat off the bottom. And if you've not caught one, that has hit a bait downward ever, you're going, no, that's not what they do. Right? They do it. So something I did, you know, dealing with some post-spawn fish, and a buddy of mine here recently did it, is literally pitching jigs. I talked about it, I think it was last week, or I said it sometime where I went, okay, you already have a jig if you have a spinnerbait and you take the blade off.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a great time to do it. Or, I don't know if I said it then, I've even, Jay, I've taken them where I've put like just a tiny blade on there where it doesn't do much at all. You know, so it's not in like a tiny little French blade or something like that. It just, it's a placeholder, but it's a little bit more flash. And bouncing things off the bottom to the point, and I don't know all the names of the stuff that we sell, but you take like your Kaolin's jig or your Kaolin's grub or like an action plastic and some of these heavier jig heads, right? And you can concoct swim jigs right then and there. Again, I'll take a figure eight meat grinder or a boss or a mini boss and take that off and create a jig in that fashion. And again, I've said it, I love the spinnerbait because it's basically, you got a weed garden up front there to keep gunk off. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, it's kind of that, I mean, all we're doing is bouncing something back to the boat, a la a tube, right? And it's one of these things, like you look at a burbot tube from Savage or the Kraken from us or a Red October. What does it do? It, up and down, up and down, up and down. Now, what's enticing about that is it's obviously its vibrational profile, but as well, it's in and out of their line of sight, Jay. And a lot of people don't think about that about tubes. He's following it, right? Is he, he's not up and down the entire time. I mean, they'll get dialed in on the thing, but you're ripping it in and out of their line of sight. And jigs are interesting in the spring because if you believe in fishing tubes, fishing swim jig stuff and the up and down motion on post spawn fish should be in your wheelhouse. You're just doing the exact same thing in a very smaller package in a way tighter area. And that can also apply for downsizing, and it can also apply later in the year. But that's something that's superbly overlooked. And I would say if you're on crazy pressure water where everyone is throwing a booker or throwing a giant killer, they're coming in there, you know, ripping, whipping around hellhounds and phantoms and just, you know, all the typical stuff. Frickin' dress up some stuff, make your own little swim jig set up or, you know, beef one up. And that can be just deadly, especially if you're having high sun conditions and things of that nature. And go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, you know, the bait's moving, but it's moving without, explain that to me, without...
forward advance.
Without forward advance, so you're really not reeling in.
No.
For the most part. Thing's dancing.
Slowly advancing.
Yeah, you're slowly covering water in that aspect. You know, that's key. Yeah, jigs are huge in the spring. When it comes to bass, when it comes to muskies, yep.
How many bass anglers have you heard in the early season? They're up there pitching swim jigs for bass and whammo blammo.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Catch a just Donkey Kong. I go, why am I not doing that with a leader? so that would be smart, you know?
Yeah.
That could work. Yeah. What do we have any stand up? I surely have asked you this before, but stand up. What's jigs. The one?
Moore's jigs. Yeah. That's a stand up type. The Kaolin's are, let's see, there's three different types of Kaolin's, but they don't have a stand-up design is that kind of flat angled head, mm-hmm. so that it kicks your presentation up at a, you know, like 45-degree angle.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. That's old school right there. Back in the day when they used to use just reaper tails, just mm-hmm. little do-nothing reaper tails. That's all it was. And small ones, too, like 5-inch, 6-inch.
I'm going to
thin little reaper tails. Yeah,
that's another little trick, too. I don't know if I'm going to give this one up, but fine.
I wouldn't.
All right, never mind. I've teased it. No.
All right, folks.
Now, one of my favorite little things to do in flats and shallows, is I'll take, you know, the kamikazes, the chatterbaits.
Yeah.
Take the blade off.
Okay.
And if you imagine what the kamikaze chatterbait is without a blade on the front, it's a big swim jig.
Mm-hmm. Skirted. Yeah.
Yep. And you've got the whippy tail in the back. And I have done that as a follow-up for tubes. So that is a great secondary option where you go, okay, they're following tubes. And say you don't have, because they make like that little Canyon Plastics tube, which is, hey, that would be an, hadn't thought about that, but that would be a good kind of pre-rig you could put together.
Yeah. You
know, 6-inch Canyon Plastics. But, you know, I've tried those and they're good. I like them in the summer, but I like taking that blade off a kamikaze and it becomes a big old ugly musky, you know, strength jig, you know, where you can just bang, let it fall, bang, let it fall, which is, you know, it's not perfect for that, but it's got, it's not like got a stand up jig, but if you're fishing 3-4 feet of water, it's perfect rate of fall and all that stuff. But, you know, like Jay just said, though, that I think the magic of that jigging thing is the slow advance. So big action, slow advance. You know, the other classic stuff to be thinking about, say like your mini tap dancer, your hell puppy, Titan Junior, dive and rise, and all of those are slow advance, but work it commensurately. You know, I think, like I said, if you're kind of on pressured stuff, or because, and the reason I talk about pressure is when you have a close season, opening weekend, it's coming, right? Everybody's coming out of the woodwork. And I think if you want to really get a jump start and get things going, that's going to be the trick to, you know, trying to fish it. A, if you fish it more effectively, you're going to win, yeah. But, you know.
So many people are throwing small bucktails and they're bringing them in pretty fast.
Yeah.
You know, so the advancement is very quick. It's not in the strike zone very long. So that's what I think what we're both getting at is these baits that
slow advance,
stick in the strike zone, slow advancement, you know, and you mentioned Titan Junior. So it's just like, I'll say that again. I said it last year. That's like, oh, that is one of my go-to presentations
day in, day out.
Yeah. I love them. Catch anything with that too.
Well, smallies and wallies and all that fun stuff. But, you know, think, again, slow advance, easy prey, slow advance, easy prey, and you know, getting in that. The only other point I would make is this. Everybody's like, oh, shut up about trolling, right? That first outside edge, right? As we look at, let's say, I'm sure you, Jay, you have an area in your mind when we talk about these spawning, post-spawn areas, and everybody kind of has the concept of these areas, right?
Uh-huh.
But, you know, if we're generally talking that 6-0, that north end of things, you can do some damage right off the rip trolling small stuff, right? Now, you know, there's some opportunities for some, like, short line trolling in some other areas, you know, on those edges and weeds and stuff, but you can definitely do a little bit of damage with your smaller cranks and even with your small blades, but slowing it down yet again, right? And something that I've talked about before and something I love to do is literally handheld trolling with the trolling motor, right? Where I'm holding a rod, I'm using like a suspended jerk bait, or I'm covering, you know, short areas. And a trick I've been using as of late that works stupid good is taking either like, you know, the Shine Glide from Savage Gear, or the Viper from Livingston, and the little versions. You have the 6-inch Viper, and I will stick that thing. You're crazy, but I will, at times even just put a little bit of line out and put on a point and drag that on edges or over an edge on the trolling motor, hand holding it, and it can be deadly effective. Where, let's say you need to cover this outside edge of stuff, because one thing you will find, we're talking about saturation, spawning flats in these areas, sometimes, Jay, they can tend to be pretty large and like flat, right? There's a lot of just flat area, right? Big ground, where don't be afraid to troll, you know, your baby shallow raider or a little Viper, or troll something along there at trolling motor speeds, you know, 1.5, 2.2, add some snaps in to cover that open edge, or kind of like the I don't want to say, not that it has a differentiating nature to it, but like kind of the open, like that first break, the first drop off and things of that nature, you know, in these bays, because they can kind of just be a bit much to cast. Does that make sense? That resonate, Jay? That click?
I think the whole thing we're getting at is Easy Neil. That's what tonight's sermon is about.
Who's this Neil? Did you say Easy Neil?
Make it an easy meal.
Meal? Oh, not Neil. Meal.
Easy Neil.
Easy Neil. God, tonight's sermon. Easy Neil. Well, Jay, it is Easter. 3 days have passed, and you need an easy kneel. Anyway, man, we just rambled there. Sorry, guys. Jay and I were, this is what he and I were talking about before we did the podcast. We said, well, why don't we just record? Because we were just riffing back and forth, kind of.
Oh, you're recording this?
Yeah. Well, Jay, you're freaking. Oh. Jay's been, Jay took the day off from work to sharpen hooks at his house. I mean, it's just like, you've got a little, didn't you get out your stone wheel? You got bike pedals on it, and you're down there just like, I think the grinding axe kind of wheel, and you're just down there sharpening thousands.
No. Neighbor Steve got back. He's been, I haven't seen him for 2 months, and brought Laika and the wonder dog, the moose. And, she was 2 months ago. The doctor said she was going to die probably that week. And she's doing great.
Dang, so, wow.
One can figure it out, but it's good to have her back too.
Way to bring the room down, Jay.
I'm just saying it's miraculous.
It is a miracle.
And guess who Neighbor Steve just booked a guide trip with in May?
Who?
Steve Herbeck.
Oh, no.
Yeah, in Madison. Yeah.
For the love Herbie. Of God, no.
That's going to be a good trip. I can't wait to hear the reports on that one. Mid-May. Could be huge.
I want to hear. Oh, man. I wish you had to. Here's the thing. I can't wait to hear the phone call from Herbeck after this one. It's going to be delightful. So anyway, guys, we're going to circle back. Yeah. We'll blast it. It's that off week here after the holiday. Get geared up for spring. Think small. Don't think big. Think small.
Easy meal.
Like G. Think easy meal. Good night.
Right on.
Later.
Night.
Stop bleeding. All I want is a safe catch and release. I've never seen a musky bird. They break my wallet, my back is hurting. All I want is a safe catch and release. I'm